You may have noticed that things out there are getting a little crazy. You may have discovered this battle can get quite confusing when spirits are high and emotions are hot. And you may have realized that both our opposition and our objective are not always clearly identifiable. The fact of the matter is, this revolution, this insurrection, has gotten a little muddy over time. So before we go chasing hell with a half-cocked water pistol or turn another good idea into a bad crusade, it's high time we drop a bomb on some misguided theology. Maybe even take aim and target some weird ideology. Perhaps we need to mow down our hurtful methodology. If this resistance of ours, this revolution we've all enlisted in, is really ever going to have true victory, we must know what it is we're actually fighting for. We must learn how to fight for it, and we must understand the way we fight for it matters. And then together, we will engage the insurrection.
As you just saw in the bumper, we've been talking about this idea of insurrection. And this is actually the last week in that series. So I'm excited to sort of wrap this up and like send us off out of this before we move on. So up to this point in this series, we have talked about the power of things, the power of the gospel, really, and bringing that power of the gospel to the here and now and building God's kingdom here and now. And so we've talked about that the kingdom of God, the gospel, redefines fear and brings freedom instead. And then we talked about the power of rehumanizing people, choosing to see people as image bearers of God and treating them accordingly. And then we talked about the power of maybe, the power of hope, and the idea of showing up together with what we have, with just enough hope that amazing things can happen in this insurrection. We talked about the prayer, that prayer is the language of this insurrection. And last week, with the power of faithfulness, of sticking with it, staying the course within this insurrection. And today, we're talking about the power of seeing. The power of seeing. So I think every war, every conflict worth its salt has different types of soldiers, right? With different jobs. Some of them, we don't even call them soldiers, right? We don't even realize that they exist, but they do. Of course, I can only be talking about spies, right? I mean, if we're honest, like we think about it for more than 2 seconds, we realize that's a thing that happens out there, even in peacetime, but especially during wartime, there are spies out there. And spies are cool, right? They're just cool because we have a lot of stories about spies and a lot of movies, a lot of books and TV shows because they're cool. Their weapons are cool. Their tactics are cool. They get to know secret stuff and do secret stuff. And their missions are always fraught with danger, right? And so it makes for exciting storytelling. I mean, who doesn't love a good Bond film, a good one, not the bad ones, or a Jason Bourne, or, you know, Melissa McCarthy, if you want to get really hardcore, or even better, Michael Scarn of Threat Level Midnight. But I think there's something more to these spy stories that appeals to us on a deeper level. I think it has something to do with maybe, with the way they are fighting. So there are troops at the front line, right, and troops on special missions and medics and so on. But the spies are fighting the same war. They're just doing it differently. They are accomplishing seemingly small tasks with a bigger purpose in mind. They're turning the tide of the war with deliberate, subversive, purposeful acts of insurrection. You follow me? So in that way, we too could be like spies in this insurrection. And so we're all called in many different ways, right? And gifted in many different ways to participate in building God's kingdom here and now. But sometimes we may just have to be a little bit more like spies. Now, don't get too literal with this and try to carry it out to, you know, the nth degree, because it'll break down. For example, we're not going to go and deliberately tell lies, right, to mess with the truth like a spy would. But in our insurrection, we may be telling the truth to get at the lies, right? And instead of spreading confusion, we're shining a light. And instead of sabotaging plans, we are sabotaging the darkness. And to do this, we have to have the power of seeing. You see, because spies, they have to be smart, and they have to be cunning and alert. They have to keep their eyes peeled for opportunities to serve the bigger picture in ways that could seem small. So let's talk about the power of seeing and how it applies to this insurrection. So this power of seeing, or as I'm going to be calling it, kingdom vision, it has everything to do with how we choose to see the world, right? Do we see an awful, broken, fallen place that's on its way to hell in a handbasket? Or do we see a lovingly and wonderfully created planet and people who are groaning for redemption? Right? It's all about perspective and how we choose to see. Because one of those views makes me want to despair and give up. Right, that these small acts of insurrection can't even phase that. But one of these views inspires me to hope for and participate in the restoration of all things and connection back to the source of life and light and truth. So when we look at this earthly kingdom, what do we see? Do we see overwhelm or do we see opportunity? Overwhelm or opportunity? So of course, we know, and we talk about all the time, there's no shortage of pain and darkness in the world, and pain and darkness that we all face as well. And we talk a lot about that. And Jesus could actually relate in this way, right? Jesus, we see his emotions in the scriptures. If you read it like Jesus is a human, you'll be surprised to see that Jesus is, in fact, a human. And so we're going to read this, Matthew 9:36, and you're going to start to hear his emotion. So Matthew 9:36, I'm reading out of the Message. It says, then Jesus made a circuit of all the towns and villages. He taught in their meeting places, reported kingdom news, and healed their diseased bodies, healed their bruised and hurt lives. When he looked out over the crowds, his heart broke. So confused and aimless they were, like sheep with no shepherd. What a huge harvest, he said to his disciples. How few workers. On your knees and pray for harvest hands. So Jesus is out and among the people. He's doing his ministry thing. He's bringing God's kingdom here now into their right now lives, right into the middle of their pain and their sickness, and healing people and teaching them. And hundreds or thousands of people would show up one point in his ministry, wherever he went. And so he looks out over these crowds, kind of, I imagine him dealing with an individual, and then looks up. Maybe he's on a hillside and he sees just throngs of people. And he's moved with compassion, some of the translations say, but I like the Message says, his heart broke. And so if that's how Jesus felt, we have permission to feel that way, right? This can be an appropriate response, and we've all felt that feeling. But here's the thing. With that feeling, with that heartbreak of compassion that we can feel, there may come a temptation that takes our empathy and compassion and turns it into something else called despair. If we're not careful, that temptation can come in and turn our empathy and compassion into despair and inaction, because that would be the overwhelm perspective. But here's the thought. What if we allowed that God-given empathy and compassion that we have when we look out at this kingdom of earth to inspire us to something else, to something more? What if our compassion as we engage in this insurrection can inform our ability to see opportunities? So we get to choose. That's a gift from God, our ability to choose, and he never violates that. So we always have a choice. We get to choose overwhelm or opportunity. And again, we all feel the exhaustion of overwhelm sometimes, And we all require seasons of rest. You guys know, if you've heard me teach, seen my life, I believe in that, okay? But as we can and when we can, what could change if we start to view this world as a sea of opportunity? Opportunities to bring insurrection of light and love and truth right here in the midst of it all and lead people to the Good Shepherd. Looking back at Matthew 9:36, near the end of that, he says, again, Jesus said, "What a huge harvest," he said to his disciples, "how few workers on your knees and pray for harvest hands." So I've heard that before, many times growing up, and I've always focused on the second half of that verse, right, which makes sense with the traditions that I grew up in, that you would focus on the lack part, right? And again, I think Jesus is pretty upset. He's pretty sad here, but he doesn't stay there. And you see, I missed the beginning of this. Yes, we need more workers, but look at the beginning of that again. What a huge harvest. What a huge harvest. That means what huge opportunities are out there for us to engage in. So I have a question for you, and this is not rhetorical. I would actually enjoy you to answer this out loud. That would be wonderful. You ready? Okay. How do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time. That's correct. Let me just make a note of that. Chris got that right. Amber got that right. One bite at a time. Some of you are like, that's disgusting and unrealistic, Benjamin. So no, you do not eat an elephant. And illegal, probably. But no, you eat an elephant one bite at a time, right? And seriously, the point is that if we can shift our perspective to opportunity, then our attitude and our energy just may shift as well. And we can start to see the opportunities for kingdom building right in front of us, right? It reminds me of that story of the Good Samaritan, right? Where Jesus tells a story where a traveler, he's robbed and beaten, he's left for dead on the side of the road, and the priest passes him by without helping him, and his countryman passes him by without helping him. But the guy who's supposed to be his cultural and political enemy stops to take care of him. And so we learn through that story, who is my neighbor? The guy asked Jesus, well, it's the person right there. It's the person right in front of you. It's the person right there that needs help. So if our neighbor is our person that's right in front of us and that's who we're to love, what if we all seize that opportunity to love the person in front of us, like today? That would cover a whole lot of people, wouldn't it? A few years ago, we were teaching through our core values, which always live back there on the wall. And I think I was teaching on stewardship. And I did this message called Build God's Kingdom Small. Which sounds a little off, right? Like, wait, no, it's supposed to be big. Like, we want this thing big, right? But the whole point about that is, how do you eat an elephant, church? Right. And remember in The Patriot, when Mel Gibson's teaching his son to shoot, he says, aim small, miss small, right? If you aim at the button and you miss, you still kill the guy. Okay, that's a little violent, but you get the point, right? You get the point. So if we use this kingdom vision to see opportunity everywhere, then that becomes actually exciting. That gives us some perspective and energy to do the work at hand. And there's a progression here. And this progression could apply to anything that we are participating in. And there's different sort of stages in how we can participate, right? So, for example, I'm made to. I have to. I want to. Or I get to. If we're operating out of I'm made to and I have to, it's not going to be sustainable. You might get some results immediately, right away, but it's not going to be sustainable. It's probably fear-based and fear-motivated if we're in the made to, have to. But then we get into the I want to and I get to. I get to participate in bringing the kingdom here. I get to see opportunity. I get to go out and love the people right here, my neighbors right here. But that can become hard to sustain too. That I get to mentality, that perspective, you can get weary in that, right? And Melody taught us about that last week, about the power of staying put, of faithfulness. And so that's why there's one more way to approach participation beyond I get to, and that would be I choose to. I choose it. And that choice is the most powerful place out of which we can operate in this insurrection. The power of choice. I choose to subvert the anger in this office meeting by demonstrating patience. I choose to model kindness and gentleness when my kids are arguing again and again and yet again. I choose an act of kindness for someone who can offer me nothing in return. Not only do I get to, I choose it. And I choose it because I've already been chosen, you see. I choose the power of seeing the opportunity for insurrection in my right now life. I choose kingdom vision. And guess what? This gets fun. This gets exciting to me. You with me? Guess what? In that freedom to choose, you are free to build the kingdom in ways that excite and enliven you. Again, you are free to build the kingdom of God in ways that excite and enliven you. This is not one size fits all. Right? Do we have the same objective? Yes. Insurrection. Bring the kingdom here and now. Live the gospel for people to see. But do we all have the same mission all the time? No. Peter felt led to bring the gospel to his own Jewish people, right, and build the church in Jerusalem. And Paul was clearly called to go as far as he could before they imprisoned him and take the light of the gospel to the Gentiles, to the non-Jewish people. They made those choices. They went with who they were and what they were called to do. So there's freedom for you to build the kingdom in ways that excite and enliven you. You get to be creative. You get to make it fun. That's okay. I think God likes fun. And I think he's okay with us building the kingdom in ways that honor who he made us to be. And what if building the kingdom in ways that excite us, or God forbid that we even enjoy, is really just agreeing with God's design all along, right? He made us to be us. He made you to be you, exactly who you are, so that you can spread the light and love of the gospel in your own beautiful and unique way. Because it's one message, but it can look so many different ways. It can look as many different ways as there are people in here, right? So what does the gospel look like lived out in the right here, right now life of Charlie? It looks beautiful, and it looks like Charlie living the gospel. And the same can be said for all of us. What if we as the church here and the capital C church come back to a use of imagination as we participate in this kingdom building? So if we choose a kingdom perspective, kingdom vision, to see this world and its people as opportunities for restoration, then here's a question. So how do we do that? Right? How do we do it? And the answer is, like a snake, naturally. Right? So half of you are thinking about, like, I hate snakes. That's disgusting. Stop talking about snakes. And half of you are thinking about, well, the snake was like the devil in the Garden of Eden. I don't think we should act like that. I'm thinking about quoting Jesus, so I'm just saying. No, it's Jesus that said that, and so let's go to Matthew 10:5-8. Jesus is sending out the 12 with marching orders. He's telling them, this is how you bring the kingdom here now. This is how you live and preach and teach and show the gospel. He says, Jesus sent his 12 harvest hands out with this charge. Don't begin by traveling to some far-off place to convert unbelievers. And don't try to be dramatic by... That's hilarious. Don't try to be dramatic by tackling some public enemy. Go to the lost, confused people right here in the neighborhood. Tell them that the kingdom is here. Did you hear that? Tell them that the kingdom is here. Bring health to the sick, raise the dead, touch the untouchables, kick out demons. You've been treated generously, so live generously. And then skipping to verse 16, he says, stay alert. This is hazardous work I'm assigning you. You're going to be like sheep running through a wolf pack, so don't call attention to yourselves. Be as cunning as a snake, inoffensive as a dove. Cunning as a snake, Jesus says. And that's an interesting way to describe that. Like, what might that mean? Well, I finished up my doctorate in ancient Greek yesterday online, and I Googled it, and but I do like to look at original languages, right? Because you get so much depth and you get so much more understanding when you look at certain words. So this word cunning, the Greek word is phronimos, and it means intelligent, prudent, sensible, and wise. It comes from the word phren, which means an inner thoughtfulness. An inner thoughtfulness. That's what this cunning word means here. So my middle child, Killian, and I, we love nature and animals and sciencey stuff, right? So we watch all these nature documentaries. We always have. He's loved them since he was like 1 and 2 years old. And we kind of geek out specifically about herpetology. And if you don't know what that is, that's the study of amphibians and reptiles, right? So one of our favorite things to watch and learn about is snakes. And so whether it's the yellow eyelash viper of South America or the spectacle cobra of the Indian subcontinent, we just love snakes. Like, did I make myself sound smart? Okay, good. So when you watch snakes on the hunt in these documentaries, right, cunning is a good word for them, right? They're crafty and they're observant and they're patient and they're opportunistic. All amazing perspectives for us as we seize the opportunities for insurrection all around us. Of course, we're not trying to devour anyone like a snake is, but we're going to find our cunning to find the opportunities around us to subvert the darkness, right? We're going to use our inner knowing, our intuition, our wisdom as we engage people. And we're going to engage them also with the grace of a dove, cunning as a snake, gentle as a dove. And so another question for you, literal question, not rhetorical. In the Bible, what does a dove symbolize sometimes? The Holy Spirit. So we use our street smarts, right? We use our God-given intuition and wisdom and our street smarts and our strategy and our personalities and who we're created to be, cunning as a snake. But we also use the grace and power and flow of the Holy Spirit in us. There's an incredible book by John Eldridge called Beautiful Outlaw, which is about the personality of Jesus. Highly recommended. And here's a passage from that book about the cunning of Jesus. It says, you will appreciate the mastery of Jesus only to the degree that you understand the minefield he walks. He is advancing against the prince of darkness in a bid for the human heart. The whole situation is booby-trapped. Satan already has the upper hand. He took our hearts captive when we fell back in Eden. Some he has snared through abuse, some through seduction, others by means of religion. Oh, how hard it is to rescue the human heart, to dislodge people from their chosen means of survival without toppling them into resignation, despair, or defensiveness. And Jesus won't take the shortcut of a power play. Read the Gospels, right? And this will be true for you. Jesus won't take the shortcut of a power play. He doesn't force anyone to follow him. He seems rather reluctant to do his miracles. He never overwhelms anyone's will with a fantastic display of his majesty. He woos, he confronts, he delivers, he heals, he shoots straight, and then he uses intrigue. He lives out before them the most compelling view of God. He lives out before them the most compelling view of God, shows them an incredibly attractive holiness while shattering the religious glaze. But still, he lets them walk away if they choose. That is being cunning as a snake and gentle as a dove within this epic battle we're engaged in to bring God's kingdom here. That is knowing who we are and whose we are. That's allowing ourselves, yes, to feel the pain of this world and allowing our hearts, yes, to break over it, but choosing opportunity and action over despair and inaction and overwhelm. That's understanding that we are behind enemy lines, but remembering that the enemy is the darkness and not the hearts and minds we're fighting for. That's kingdom vision, and that's the power of seeing. And I can affirm that in you, Element. I see that all the time with you. I've seen you grow from want to get to choose to. And to hang right in that choose to. And we could tell about 1,000 stories of you guys doing this, using that kingdom vision, but here's one. So our friend Kathy, sitting back there, I asked her if I could tell the story. She said no, but I'm just kidding. She said yes. So Kathy has a friend who is suffering from a debilitating disease. And it's a really tough situation. She's married and she has a little girl. And life's been pretty hard for them, as you can imagine. But Kathy goes over there. And she's been going over there and serving that family and loving them and being there for them. She saw that opportunity for insurrection, for kingdom work right in front of her, right there with her neighbor, her friend, and she's been taking that opportunity. So in that, as she's been engaging in this insurrection in that way, she started to see there's a lot of things that need to be done in this house. The husband is working, taking care of the little girl. There are priorities over putting blinds up, right? There's more important things than getting stuff clean or getting the garage clean. So Kathy brought that to her house church. Said, hey, this is an opportunity for us to go and bring the kingdom here and now and love and serve someone. And so we got organized and another house church joined in and we're able to go over there and knock out all of these tasks around the house, get things cleaned up and installed and organized and folded and all of these things. Why? Because somebody had kingdom vision. Because somebody saw opportunity instead of overwhelm. Is it heartbreaking? Yes. Yes. But the choice was made, I will not be overwhelmed. I will see opportunity. And we went and we did kingdom work in that house. There's a famous quote that may or may not have been said by St. Augustine. It's debatable. But it's this. Preach the gospel, and when necessary, use words. I know, it's like a religious red flag going off for some of us, right? Wait a second. This doesn't get us off the hook from verbalizing the gospel, right? That's not what this is about. That's valuable, to literally preach and teach the gospel and use our words. I think he's saying here, preach the gospel and when necessary, use words. I think he's saying that the gospel is more than words. It's more than just something to preach and to say. It is something that is it is more than something that's simply proclaimed, right? It's something that is internalized to the point that it subverts our own darkness and discord in our own hearts, and then compels us to act, to take action and to bear fruit. But not to prove anything. All of that bearing fruit stuff is used like with fear, isn't it? Like, prove it. Prove you're a Christian. Let me see your fruit. But not to prove anything, right? The apple tree doesn't have to prove or defend anything by growing apples. When the apple tree grows apples, it's just simply being who it was designed to be. So we can preach the gospel with words, yes, but in this insurrection, we will also preach it with our hands. We will preach the gospel with our feet. We will preach the gospel with our sweat and our tears and our prayers and our shared hope and with blind installation and garage organization, with a stubborn clinging to freedom over fear, with our meals and our hugs and our songs and our acts of selfless service, and how we love one another. This is how we preach the gospel. This is how we wage this war for the hearts of people in this world. This is how we engage in this insurrection. So let's do it. No, really, we're gonna do something right now. Chris and Charlie, would you guys mind like handing these out here? So you have a little assignment. You're welcome. I did teach middle school for 9 years. Was it 9 years? 90 years? It felt like 90 years. It was 9 years. That's it. So on this piece of paper, this is just going to be for you to help you to do a little bit of processing, okay? And there are really three questions on there. And what I'm asking you to do is think of a person. And I believe the first part is about a person that you really, really love deeply, someone you're really, really close to. And think about an opportunity to live the gospel for them, to bring an insurrection into their lives. It could be, remember, it could be one bite at a time. It could be something seemingly small. But write that person's name, someone very close to you that you love, that you could do something to bring light and love and truth into their life today or this week or today. The second one, I believe it said, I should have kept one for myself. Look at that. No, I'm good. Thank you. The second one is about someone who may be your biblical enemy, in quotation marks. And here's what I mean by that. The Bible uses that word enemy. Probably most of us don't feel like we actually have actual enemies, right? But what that means in the Bible is someone that is treating you how you do not want to be treated, right? Someone who has made your life difficult or slandered you or something like that. If there's maybe it's someone from, I don't know, 2 years ago. I don't know. But if there's someone like that, that you could bring the light and love and truth of the gospel in the here now, right now life of that person, then write their name there. And the last one, if there's someone's name that comes to mind that you think that you could bring an insurrection of love and light to them without receiving anything in return. Of course, we can't predict that. But someone where you just do it and, like Jesus, open-handedly walk away or open-handedly just wait. And you may never see anything. You may never get any feedback. You may receive nothing in return. But that's a person that we could bring the gospel to as well through acts of love and service and insurrection. So it's okay if you can't think of someone for each of those things. You'll just receive partial credit at the end. That's okay. No, it's okay if you can't think of someone now. This is just to get practical for a second. This is just to use that inner thoughtfulness, that cunningness, to think of how we can do this today and tomorrow and this week. So I'm going to give you another minute or so. And while you guys are thinking, writing, processing, I'm going to go ahead and have the band come back up. Thank you guys so much for your participation in that and your attention today. And let's go ahead and pray over this. God, we thank you for your word today and the way that it speaks and the way that, God, it's never that you have just spoken. It's that you speak always and actively. So God, I pray that the source of our inspiration and our imagination and creativity and our inner thoughtfulness, our ability to see opportunity instead of overwhelm, our ability to use exactly who we were made to be, our personalities and our placement in this world and here now, pray that we will look to you and connect with you as the source and sustainer of all of that. God, we know that with you there is grace, grace, and grace for wherever we're at today. And some of us might be really weary and we might need a season of rest. And God, help us to step into the flow of grace and to agree with the truth that we have permission to rest if we need to rest. And in that, help us to be aware and knowing of your stirring and the growth and the work you're doing in us. So when we're ready, we can step back into that place of opportunity. God, it's Christ in me. It's the eternal hope of glory, God. It is Jesus in us. And then us naturally bearing that fruit of who we are in Christ. And that's preaching the gospel. So pray for the names that were written down, those that will be thought of today, this week. God, give us kingdom vision. And I pray, God, I pray this with all my heart, and I believe and trust that you can do this. God, I pray that every little act of insurrection that's going to take place from what we have learned and seen through this series, that as we go out and we practice this today and this week, pray that it will just snowball and multiply, that each act of insurrection, each brick that's laid in your kingdom, God, will echo through eternity. That's kingdom vision. God, knowing that the smallest, seemingly smallest act, like what Jesus said, a cup of cold water, that echoes into eternity. That's another brick, another brick, another brick. We love you, God. We're grateful that we get to. And in that, because of that, we choose to. because we have been chosen.